Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. We'd like to thank Teva Pharmaceuticals and Griffin Foundation for making this show possible today. Today, we will be speaking with Dr. LaVon Goodman about psychosis. Psychosis is a symptom that is associated with Huntington's disease that has great impact on families. I'm so glad we have Huntington's disease experts like Dr. Goodman that are willing to speak to us about this symptom. So let's jump right into the show. So, hi, LaVon.
Hi there. May Awareness, Huntington's Awareness Month.
Yes. And you sound like you're feeling much better. I know you were sick last. We were supposed to do this show last month, but LaVon ended up getting bronchitis. So we are happy to have you on today.
Now that I have my voice back, for better or worse.
Yes. Well, let's jump right into this topic. I know that a lot of people were talking about the show and are excited to talk about this topic and hear your thoughts on it. So let's start out by talking about what is psychosis and how common is it in Huntington's disease?
Well, psychosis is very strictly defined as having either delusions or hallucinations. And what it refers to is a misperception or inaccurate perception of reality. So you may be hearing or seeing things that aren't there in reality, or believing things that are not reality-based. And so that is essentially the official psychiatric definition.
And how common is it in HD?
Well, I don't think that there's a real good answer for that. It is probably the symptom that occurs more rarely than the other symptoms like depression or anxiety or obsessional thoughts. Those occur much more commonly than psychosis. And the reports of how frequently it occurs in Huntington's, in individuals with Huntington's, varies so much that it's very hard to give a good number. It is probably high, might not, this is just my opinion, it's probably higher than that is reported, because these studies don't follow a person lifelong to see what the incidence of psychosis is over the lifespan of individuals with Huntington's. Instead, the studies kind of report on, you know, a period of as much as 18 months or people who, you know, come in for their enroll HD visit. And those individuals tend to be healthier with earlier disease than you would see in the entire lifespan of a Huntington's individual. So I'm not answering your question very well, but let's estimate 10% or so over the lifetime. But I'm going to guess that it's, my opinion is that it's probably greater than that if you count milder symptoms that may be transient, or many individuals are on drugs that treat psychosis. They're on these drugs for other symptoms like treating chorea, or treating irritability. So it may be that there would be milder, that we're not seeing or counting milder types of psychotic symptoms because they're essentially being pre-treated. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't answer your question.
I kind of thought that. No, yeah. You absolutely did. And that's what I was wondering, is that because I know that like Zyprexa or some of these are used for chorea and stuff, and so that made me wonder if that was kind of maybe why it's already being pre-treated. So that's interesting to hear you say that, because I kind of wondered that.
Well, there's no way of knowing, but it makes sense that that would be so. Nothing wrong with common sense.
Yeah, and you wrote a great article on HD Drugworks about this very topic, and I posted it on the event page. But you talk about delusions versus hallucinations. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
You know, they're harder to find, but you'll know them when you see them. I can speak from my own practice. And I gave a couple of examples, a few examples in the article. I can follow people over the course of their illness, so see some of these symptoms evolve. And you know, I have to say that in the majority of my patients, that I have not noted psychosis. So it's more, it's not that it's going to happen to you if you have Huntington's. It's more rare, and I believe that in many cases, if one can identify early symptoms and treat them, perhaps they will not cause as much distress in families and in the individual themselves. It's distressing to have a delusion. The delusion example I gave was of a woman who was in an adult family home, and when she came into that home, she was not able to bring all of her clothes. So she had a fewer number of outfits to change into than she'd had in her home, and that was bothersome to her. And so she worried about her clothes. Would she have enough clothes to change, to, you know, fit what she believed, what she preferred? And this worried her. She was attached to her clothing, shall we say, as a lot of people are. Over time, she became, she obsessively worried about them and would go through her drawer checking to make sure that they were all there, and would do this a couple times a day. And then over the course of her, and that was an obsessional or perseverative thought and
right.
worry. And then she started thinking that, well, somebody's stealing them, particularly on laundry day. Or laundry days a couple of times a week in this home. They would do laundry, so some of her clothes would be indeed missing. And then she started to believe that people were stealing her clothes, and in fact a particular individual was stealing her clothes. So that became a false belief or a delusion that her clothes were being stolen. It was an irrational thought, and you could not rationalize with her about, well, it's laundry day. No, they were missing. So there was, not just missing, they were stolen. And many of the delusions are in not just Huntington's, but in many cases of cognitive impairing diseases like Alzheimer's. There will be paranoid thoughts that then will evolve into, oh, my wife is having an affair with someone because the relationship has changed, so it's a misperception. Now, she may indeed be having an affair. You need to check that out. But most often that's not the case. There's a belief that's false. And then it becomes a very harmful belief that interferes with, you know, the ability of that person to cope and the family to cope. Does that make sense?
Right.
Give you an idea.
It's
mainly
absolutely.
Paranoid thoughts that become more severe, and they don't have to be paranoid, but that's the most common. I had another individual who... The delusion was pleasant. He believed that he was Jesus, and he was
oh, wow.
caring for people. So it was a grand, a delusion of grandeur.
Right.
And then on another occasion, he would be working with Bill Gates in Seattle, you know, from Microsoft. So these were pleasant enough and grandiose delusions, beliefs that he had that were not based in reality.
Now, hallucinations, and I think I hear about this a lot. More the delusions of people. I think I hear quite a bit about more of the delusions and people like what during like the social media and when I'm with families and stuff, I hear like I heard a man thought that he was a millionaire. He owned homes all over the world. And I've heard, you know, I've heard more of like, and a lot of what you touched on about accusing the wives of affairs or not coming home and different things like this, that the wives were kind of sitting there saying, this isn't true, you know. So I hear a lot about this type of the things you're, the delusions you're referring to. I hear this quite often.
And they are more common than hallucinations are in Huntington's. And that's probably, you know, that's different than in Parkinson's, where hallucinations tend to be more common.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it can be vary from, you know, disorder to disorder, but delusions tend to be more common. But, you know, they can go together. Another patient who believed that another person who believed that she was going to contract AIDS or hepatitis C or an infectious disease by using a toilet in her adult family home. Then she started seeing, so that was the delusion, she believed this. And then later she saw people outside the window who were accusing her of having AIDS.
Okay.
So they can go together. So they're false beliefs. And being able to, this woman that I'm talking about believing that she had AIDS and that people, she thought people were saying she had AIDS and she saw them coming outside her window, was effectively treated, and she no longer has this symptom. And she's living with her, you know, living with her son, and everything's going well, as can be expected, but without any of those symptoms. So psychosis is a manageable symptom in most cases. It's always a balance of how severe the symptom is, how troublesome, how burdensome it is to family and patient, and the risks and side effects of antipsychotic drugs. So there's a fine balance there. There needs to be a best balance there. Often, at least it's my impression that antipsychotics are overused, there's not an attempt to, once the symptom is managed, trying to decrease the dosage of the antipsychotic because of side effects that may become more severe as the individual with Huntington's progresses with their disease.
Yeah, and then that kind of leads me into the article that you had sent me, and I had posted it, and a lot of people started commenting about this article. So can you explain this article to us that talks about treatment and stuff?
Well,
it's
the
very scientific, so if you can give us a lay version of it.
Oh, I see. This was too scientific here. Okay. So you, that's a good thing. You know, I want to be able to, you know, explain it in a way that is understandable. You know, it's hard. Yeah. Psychosis is one of the harder symptoms. It's not well understood what's causing it. And the treatments, even though the treatments are antipsychotic drugs, one person may not respond to the first drug but will to another. So what, to ask the specific questions that people were having trouble with.
So
point me
so
in the right direction.
So one individual had asked, you know, is giving my loved one an antipsychotic going to cause them, you know, am I causing them more harm than I am?
All antipsychotics, all drugs have side effects. And it's always a balance, you know, of aspirin has side effects.
Sure.
It's always about, and Tylenol does, and it's often dosage related, but it doesn't have to be. So it's always a balance of your benefit, you know, against the risk of the drug. By and large, the lowest dose of a drug that manages the symptom or treats the problem is the one you should be on. And that's why I think there is wisdom in reducing antipsychotic dosage or trying to do it at intervals of every 6 months or so. Now, we sometimes forget to do that, and then we start adding other medications, and then there is a mix of side effects that goes with multiple medications. So is it the side effects that happen with antipsychotics, there's a long list. I think there is certainly with the newer antipsychotics, I think the most troublesome symptom for individuals is weight gain. And weight gain also, you know, changes metabolic things, so that can be harmful. Makes your cholesterol go up and perhaps brings on some diabetes associated with the weight gain. All of the antipsychotics, and many experts, psychiatry experts at least, believe that the older antipsychotics cause more of the Parkinson's-like symptoms. Now, Huntington's has mixed movement disorders. There is the chorea that you can see, or the involuntary movements that are quick, and then the movement disorder that's thought to be more disabling, certainly over the long term, even though you don't see it in the beginning, is the slowness of movement that's similar to what happens in Parkinson's disease. And it's that slowness of movement that interferes with walking, with using your hands, you know, being able to coordinate, balance, although chorea can affect that too, swallowing. All of these are voluntary movements that are slowed down by Huntington's itself, and then when you add a drug to that, you slow it down more. So that is a side effect. You know, you don't want to impair swallowing when swallowing is already impaired. However, a psychotic symptom is very detrimental to the person and to the family, and is an unsafe situation. So the drug is indicated, but at a dose that manages, not necessarily makes all of the symptoms go away, but manages that symptom while trying not to cause side effects. So antipsychotics you should be careful with. You shouldn't prescribe them lightly or without monitoring for side effects, and without having your doctor monitor for side effects. You know, putting someone on an antipsychotic and see in a year is not good medicine. not good medical practice is what I mean.
Right.
So I didn't really answer the question because it's not really, it's not black and white. Antipsychotics should be treated with a lot of respect because they can cause side effects. And but there are symptoms in Huntington's that it is, the benefit is greater than the risk.
Yeah, I think back in the days, like the sanitarium, when they didn't have these medications, and you know, you see back the conditions of the sanitariums and these things, and you look back at the history, and it, we are lucky to have these medications to be able to treat some of this, these symptoms.
Right, some of the more severe symptoms that are very, you know, they're very, very scary for individuals who have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I would imagine,
the belief, it's not just, I mean, it's hard enough on families, but it's very hard on the individual with Huntington's too. It's scary.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that makes you very unhappy, or you're frightened by what it is you're hearing,
right,
or seeing, and it confuses you.
Yeah.
Further, so it is a symptom that is very distressful for individuals with Huntington's too.
Yeah. I remember a lady telling me she saw a alligator and a snake in her backyard wrestling that lived in California. And she said, she looked at me and she said, I know it wasn't right. She said, I knew it. She said, but I was still seeing it. And I can imagine that would be so scary.
Right. It is scary, but there was the reality that it wasn't, she knew it wasn't real.
Yeah.
And so that is not actually, it is, that's not your usual hallucination in Huntington's. That kind of hallucination is a little more common in Parkinson's disease, where there is, you see things, but you know it's not true. You know it's not really there. And that's not the kind of usual psychotic symptom of Huntington's. Now,
usually
hallucinations
they
can happen.
There.
You know, hallucinations can happen under very, very stressful situations.
Right.
And they're transient. Hallucinations and these psychotic-like symptoms can happen because you're sick with something else. Also, so having a psychotic symptom doesn't necessarily mean that you have psychosis at or the disease causing the psychosis. In other words, if you have, let me give an example. If you have an individual with Huntington's who's never had a delusion or hallucination and they develop a fever and you can't find the source of infection, that person might have psychotic symptoms, but it wouldn't be due to the Huntington's. It would be due to the delirium or the altered brain state that the infection caused.
Right, that makes sense.
So not all psychotic symptoms are due to the underlying disease.
Right. Well, you kind of touched on this, but can you kind of just talk to us a little bit about what role stress plays in psychosis?
Well, you know, in terms of Huntington's, I don't think that there's no proof really that what I'm saying is true. There's no scientific study in any of that I'm aware of anyway. Of course, there may be out there, and I'm not aware of them. They're certainly not there in Huntington's. There's no proof that stress will bring on psychosis, but I believe that it can, at least in my experience, when people are stressed by something, whether there is noise or some intercurrent serious thing happening, a worry, then that can make psychotic symptoms worse. Can it bring them on? I don't think there's necessarily any evidence of that. But I think if you look at some of the examples I gave of how the psychotic symptom came on, and I think this is true in Alzheimer's too, there's often some reality in this hallucination. I gave an example of, another individual who, being moved from their home, a fellow who lived by himself and needed good assistance, was placed in an adult family home. And then the same night that he got there, there was this huge windstorm that blew trees down, and there were power outages. And so it was, you know, scary and for everyone. And it's certainly scary for him because he's in a new environment all of a sudden. He's in it, not in his home. He's in a new environment. And he looks out the window and there's this big tree down outside. And then the next day, workmen come with their loud noises and saws and removing debris of this big unsafe tree out there. And he started perceiving that these men were going to harm him. They're out there making noise with saws, and they're going to harm him. And so after it was after it was over, he could still see the men there. So it was a very stressful situation that brought on, that at least was coincidental, and I believe it prompted in the setting of a man who was probably going to have some psychosis. It prompted the onset of the more severe symptom. I think it's related. Is it stress alone? No. It needs to be in a setting of it. You know, the things that happen with our brains, it's not usually one thing. It's a combination of things that add up to a certain point that kind of throw us over the edge. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And I think with psychosis and any psychiatric, you know, thing that as a caregiver, I think we don't know what to do, especially with like a crisis. My husband had a hallucination one time. It was due to an adverse effect of a medication he was put on. So, you know, he ended up hallucinating. And I remember sitting there and thinking to myself, what do I do? You know, he started talking about he saw things crawling around. And I was sitting there and I almost went into a shock. Dr. Goodman, like, what do I do? Like, I didn't know who to call. I didn't know what to do. So I think if you can kind of help like us caregivers that are listening in on if a hallucination starts happening or something, what should we do as caregivers?
Well, it's easy for me to say, but it's harder to do. And I'm going to say, stay calm. And one of the, initially, it is scary because it's really not making sense to you, and it's scary for that individual. So what do? You try to remain calm yourself. You don't try to rationalize because it's a belief. If they're seeing things somewhere, then go into a different room. You know, calm and distract if it's possible. And then any abrupt onset of a symptom like this is usually due to something other than Huntington's. That's another thing that I didn't mention in the article. If there's no abnormal thoughts or non-real thoughts of seeing things or hearing things or believing things that aren't true, and then all of a sudden something happens, then it's either, most likely, either due to a medication. Drug abuse can certainly do this. Marijuana can do this. Certain drugs can do it. Being sick with something else, you know, having a urinary tract infection. So other medical events or drug-related or coming off of drugs sometimes will do the same thing. There are drugs that are, you know, in common use for colds. So there can be I don't know which drug your husband, which drug that was, but if there has been a new drug that's been started, dehydration can do it. So illness of some other sort, if it's an abrupt thing, it's probably not Huntington's. It is a symptom for which you need to get some medical help.
Yeah.
That is one that all symptoms need medical help, but this one needs medical help fairly, urgently.
Mm-hmm.
Psychosis.
Yeah, I know when I called in.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
yeah,
I didn't interrupt you. Go ahead. Oh, I know when I called in, I said, I called UC Davis right away that after hours, and I told them what was happening, and they kind of advised me as long as he wasn't in any position to hurt himself or hurt others, his primary care doctor put him on Ambien for sleep, uh-huh. which was really bad of me as a caregiver to not consult his HD, his expert doctor in HD. I should have contacted her and asked if this was okay, but I didn't. It was a terrible experience, but, you know, he kind of just said, you know, the drug will wear off and just stay calm. But if he was in any danger of hurting himself or others, then to definitely call 911.
Right. So you found, a reason for it, a new drug. Sleep deprivation can be something that is an additional stress. Sleep deprivation
right.
in a normal person can cause psychosis. So there's a long list of things that can cause it. I mean, you did right by calling, and you did that. You sought some help. You knew this was an urgent thing, and the physician was able to say, hey, it's this medication. It will wear off. Without your having to do more, and you stayed calm, and you dealt with
right.
it in that sense. It doesn't; these things don't go away real quickly,
yeah.
or come on
yeah.
real quickly either. Usually, unless there's something else doing it. So you were a good
right.
example of how to do it.
Yeah, it was definitely it's definitely a scary thing. Yes, I thought that was well, and so. Yeah, it was interesting. But I think as a caregiver, I think we get kind of nervous. But I like that to stay calm. That's good advice because that's something I didn't do and I wish I would have done because I did
well,
kind of panic.
Easy. It's easy for me to say from here and much harder to do when you're experiencing it. It's a scary symptom. You know, what's happening here? There's something wrong. If it's an
yeah.
abrupt onset, and there's not any, building up to it, where there's transient misperceptions that seem to be less severe, if it comes on very quickly, then something else is causing it. And so what he was having was delirium, actually, and it wasn't related. It wasn't his underlying Huntington's that was causing it.
Yeah.
Of course, he was more sensitive to it because of his Huntington's. He was more sensitive to the drug, more sensitive to having a side effect.
Right, yeah. Oh, well, is there, I thank you so much for talking about this with us. I know it doesn't look like we have any, I know the only question we had in the chat room, I think you already covered during the talk, it was what's the difference between psychosis and delusions, and I know that we discussed that in the beginning. So, do you have any final thoughts, Dr. Goodman, before we close off the show?
Yeah, there had been an article had been published recently about anticholinergic drugs. Cold medications, and that I think may have caused a little bit of a stir, and I think it's it is somewhat related to our discussion because a number of antipsychotic drugs that are used frequently in Huntington's was on the list of drugs causing or drugs related to worsening of cognition in elderly healthy people and elderly people with early changes before a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, that if you were on certain kinds of medications, it was associated with more rapid change to from early cognitive dysfunction to Alzheimer's defined dysfunction. And a number of these medications are in common use in, they were both, besides the usual suspects of cold medicines, the things that you get across the counter, the chlortrimeton medicines and things like that, the antihistamines have anticholinergic, I'm using some big words here, but that was the...
Yeah, this is actually the article I was talking about earlier. The scientific article, this is the one I was talking about that people, I pushed out, people were wondering, oh, it's so scientific. That was the article I was referring to earlier.
Yes. So I will, okay, I thought it was the article that I'd written on psychosis. Okay, so
that article was fantastic.
It is a difficult article, the anticholinergic drug one. There was a huge list, number of drugs that seemed to be associated with, was not proven, seemed to be associated with cognitive loss, more rapid cognitive impairment in a group of elderly people. I forget how old they were, since I'm in the elderly range, I hate to say what it is. But anyway, so older individuals that followed in an observational study, like Enroll to a degree, where they came in every so often, every 6 months or so, I think it was, don't quote me on that, but and they measured various things, and they found that people who were on certain drugs that were these anticholinergic drugs or drugs that interfered with the neurotransmitter that's low in Alzheimer's to start with, so you're kind of making that worse, seemed to make Alzheimer's go faster. That's a simplistic sort of description, but that's what they were saying. It wasn't Huntington's individuals. These were Alzheimer's people, older individuals, some who had cognitive impairment and some who didn't. There seemed to be, I'm going to say it again, there seemed to be a more rapid, you know, decline in cognitive ability if you were on this class of drugs, anticholinergic drugs. And there's a huge list. And it was a huge list. And olanzapine was on that list of being culprit, which is Zyprexa, and so was so was Seroquel or quetiapine, and so was Paxil or paroxetine. Drugs that are in common use in Huntington's. And what would I say? At kind of what the author said. You can't. This is not proof that these drugs do it, but it's. The association appears to be, you know, if I were to say, well, there's not proof here and they need to do a bigger study, there has been a lot of research over the past 5-10 years that has been very suggestive that these drugs do impair cognition. They're changing how the brain functions. And it makes sense. So how long will it take them to prove these things? A very long time. We don't wait for that. Yeah. So I think one of the things they said, which makes perfect sense, is that, well, if there's an alternative, do the alternative. For instance, if, you know, you're taking Benadryl for your cold, or you're, and these are people who are taking things long-term. if you're taking Benadryl-like drug, it was one that was, you know, very high on the list for causing problems or potentially causing problems, then use something that's not as strong an anticholinergic. Use Zyrtec. So if there's an alternative, use one that has less of that effect. And one could make the same argument for paroxetine, for instance. Instead of using Taxol, use one that's lower on the list. Now, Effexor was on the list, but it was on much, much lower on the list. And it was listed as possible. So anything on that list that was two or three, if there's an alternative, and there are alternative SSRIs, for instance. There are alternative antipsychotics, even though olanzapine is probably the drug that antipsychotic that is used most frequently as an antipsychotic in Huntington's. And one might think about that and say, hey, maybe I'd rather be on Risperdal or Risperidone or Prazol, Abilify. If those were alternative possibilities, might you and your doctor consider that? Yes.
Right.
I mean, that's what I would do as a physician. Would I, you know, consider changing one of my patients who I've had on olanzapine to one of the potential, you know, perhaps lesser side effect profile? I probably would. Explaining this to family, and they may say, hey, don't rock the boat, Dr. Veach Goodman, don't rock the boat. And there's something to be very much said for that, too. But try to explain, as I'm doing today, well, if there's new evidence that suggests that an equal alternative may have fewer cognitive-related effects, then we might consider it. Now, remember, though, that also that cholinase or this anticholinergic side effect may not, you know, be as significant for people with Huntington's. We don't know that. So we have to learn from research in other diseases and try to make our best educated guess. So as new things come out, if we can choose those drugs that may have fewer long-term consequences for potential harm, well, then we should probably do that. I mean, that's the way I would look at it for my own patients. Is it bad if it's not changed? I can't say that because this is this is preliminary, a relatively small study, and the authors on that study say, hey, a larger one needs to be done. However, it was a careful study in terms of the scanning that they did, the cognitive testing that they did, and though the number affected was small, and that's the major criticism, I think, is you have too small of a number to really, really say this is firm evidence. It's not firm evidence. A lot of studies are this way. You don't get a yes or a no. You get a maybe. Right. And so you have to base your practice on a maybe and know that you might be wrong. The maybe might be wrong.
Yeah.
So I can't allay fears because, well, there isn't enough information, fears about the use of these drugs.
Right.
But I have switched more towards the Abilify, and I use Risperidone a fair amount too, and olanzapine sometimes. It's less expensive.
Uh-huh.
You know, aripiprazole or Abilify was not generic. And as I was looking over things today. There's a new warning on Abilify, actually, that just came out today from the FDA, saying things like obsessive gambling can happen. So there may be, it's rare. You know, if these things are reported, the FDA has to let people know. Even
yes,
if it's a rare event, to be aware of it and explain this to families. If it happens, you stop the drug or you reduce the dosage. It's a rare side effect. No one knows what the best antipsychotic is for. And there's been a big fight over, not fight, yeah, well, maybe fight, over this whole antipsychotic, the different classes of antipsychotics. There's been a battle over which one's best for the last decade. The answer isn't in.
Yeah. Do you think that it may be different from each individual on which one's best?
It's always different for each individual.
Sure, yeah.
However, you would want to, some people will respond to one antipsychotic and not another. The same way with an antidepressant.
Yeah.
A person may respond to one versus another better, or maybe the situation changed. Was it really the drug, or did something else get better? It's very hard to tell those differences in a clinical trial. There are a lot of gray areas and uncertainty when we use drugs, saying one is better than the other. Often one is better than the other in certain respects and then not as good as the second one,
right,
in other respects. So each individual, it's very different. And each patient, each individual should, each person should be, is unique. So care should be individualized.
It makes me wonder with this data that came out of that study, if like they're going to do a bigger, you know, a larger study, larger scale study on this. I mean, wouldn't this be enough information for the NIH to say, something, you know?
Well, to pay attention to it, probably. I think, and I guess this is a plug for Enroll too. These people are in long-term studies for of older people, and what's different, trying to learn what's different about people who go ahead to have Alzheimer's and people who don't. And they keep good, pretty good, record of medications that people are on. And so they found in their study that people on certain medications didn't do as well. And that's an important clue. Now, Enroll does the same thing. People are seen once a year. Drugs that people are on are recorded. And perhaps there will be large enough numbers to say, well, people who were on this antipsychotic did worse than other people. And that
right. And Enroll
is some, or better, you know. Those are very hard studies and very hard to draw conclusions from, because maybe that person was on this medication because they were sicker to start with. So it's very, very hard to tease that out. But that's what they're trying to do, and why it sounded so complicated, that study on the anticholinergics. And that is what the experts who will study the Enroll data will try to draw some conclusions from. It's not easy, but it's a place to start.
Yeah, I think Enroll is so important. My husband was involved in cohort and then Enroll, and it's just it's once a year, like you were saying. So I think if anyone can get involved and wants to get involved and it works for their families, Enroll is a great way to get involved in a really good clinical study.
And it may provide over time the sort of information that is coming from this study, that there are associations between certain drugs and outcomes that are either better or not.
Yeah.
Does that answer some of it? It's a gray answer
because
that's what it is.
But no, I'm really glad you clarified that because I think a lot of people kind of had some questions because that was such a scientific document. But that is definitely very helpful. And we definitely will keep a close eye on
that. There isn't a conclusion. There isn't a conclusion. And but it's kind of leaning that way, that maybe paying attention to, you know, that side effect of a drug that you're not going to see quickly might be harmful.
Right, right. Yep. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Goodman, for coming on and talking to us. As always, touching on hard subjects for us to talk about. You always are our go-one woman to talk about these things. I think we can wrap it up now. Any final thoughts? Are we good?
A plug for guidelines for Huntington's. The psychiatry experts from Europe and from HSG have worked hard on getting guides out there for families and for information and guides for doctors about psychosis in Huntington's. It wasn't just this small group, but we all the opinions of about more than 80 experts at centers, subspecialty centers, also had a chance to voice their opinion about guides, and hopefully that is something that will come out before the end of the year, along with some other symptoms. So a plug for those.
That is. I know we're starting to see all this exciting stuff come out of the HSG, which is really fun. They just released some of their videos for HD Awareness Month, and I think it's really neat what they're doing right now. Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
Better education
about
symptoms and guides, I think, are important indeed. Okay. Well, it's good talking to you.
It's something you've been talking about for so long. You know, I've been hearing you talk about these guides for so long, so I'm so glad they're starting to come about. So,
you'll find that on the HSG side, the chorea and irritability and obsessive compulsive guides are there too.
Yes, yes. And we'll put those up on the show page too for everyone to have a direct link to. So, as always, thank you, Dr. Goodman, for coming on. We'll talk to you next month, first week of every month. This coming up shows, we have Dr. Ray Dorsey and Nancy Wexler coming on. Ray Dorsey will be on the 11th, and Dr. Nancy Wexler will be on the 18th. So those are very exciting shows. Happy HD Awareness Month to everybody, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good night.